Good evening, Grand Rapids. Welcome to another episode of CTV, the show dedicated to ventilating your mind, letting a little fresh air in there, break through your preconceptions and the brain control, thought control that's been perpetrated on you and your loved ones for your entire life. It's pretty close to the Matrix, doesn't it sound like that? CTV is a live call-in television program. It appears every first and third Wednesday of the month. And we're kind of taking a free-form show tonight. We're going to try to hit on a lot of different topics, all pointing in a roundabout way towards the propaganda of why certain things are happening and people believe certain things and what the vibe is put out towards and whose interests are served by putting out these vibes that the American people seem to digest so readily. My name is John. I'm on my immediate right is Steve, and on my far right, well, we're getting it mixed up, but here's Steve, yes.
Hey.
And then on my extreme right is Rick. And we'll be taking phone calls for most of the show tonight, but we're going to go into a little review of current events here. Would you like to make any opening comments, Steve?
They didn't find any weapons of mass destruction, and the insult to the injury of the war and the impoverishment of Americans is the tax cut. We can wage an imperial war and then cut taxes mainly for the wealthiest 1%, and when it comes to inking it out, the one thing they can't afford is to raise the child credit for people who make less than $26,000 a year. This is an egregious insult to injury, and we're going to be talking about a lot of things tonight, but I think that what we should never forget is the utter contempt with which the current administration and the global triumphalists of this new American empire are willing to treat the workers who don't make it into their golden paradise. The religion of the free market promises great goodies for all, unless you happen to be one of the people who's actually producing. And those tend to be the people who are actually doing the services.
Yeah, they
menial
make the goodies.
Services, they make the goodies, they clean up after the party, but they don't even get a little relief when Bush's big tax cut comes through. He's already, like, he's counting them out as voters for him in 2004, apparently. Maybe he thinks he could just win the election by having the money vote for him.
It's amazing that it's amazing that having heard this information through alternative media, basically, and some small-scale publications, that it's ceased to surprise me anymore. It still amazes me, but it doesn't surprise me now that I understand, I think, better how a propaganda works in this country, that actually the media that you think is free is actually never was designed to be free. The election system in which you vote was never designed to be democratic. And the propaganda system is made to convince you that, in fact, it is a democratic system when it's not, that it is a free media when it's not. Any concerns on your mind, Rick?
Oh, yeah, lots of concerns.
I have a concern first about that graphic we just showed. We should show it again because it left off the caption, which was the point of the caption at the bottom of the graphic.
Oh, yeah, if we had the graphic,
which says
the first graphic,
what America sees and then what the world sees. It was what you were just talking about. If we could get that centered so people could read the caption at the bottom,
yeah.
It says what America sees, it's a triumphal ride into Baghdad, and the other is what the world sees, and that's the body lying under the
tracks. Right, it's the
science.
It's behind the scene behind the camera here that you don't get to see, actually. It's out on that side of the camera. You know, you don't know what's in this studio. And when you watch something on TV, some triumphant war thing, and we'll get to another graphic at the end, I believe that'll bring out a distinct propaganda moment of the pulling down of that statue in Baghdad.
Oh, good.
But back to Rick again.
Yeah, just picking up on what Steve was saying, you know, they have not found the weapons of mass destruction, which, of course, Scott Ritter, who was the UN inspector there and had been a participant as a combat person in the first Gulf War, and of course was ridiculed, and then they brought up a scandal to try and discredit him, and he's still being trashed by the right wing on TV whenever he appears. And what you were saying, John, about the democracy, you know, a lot of people on the right say this is not a democracy, it's a republic. Well, that is kind of a specious argument. It's a distinction without a difference. A republic is simply a representative democracy as opposed to a direct democracy where we would vote on everything. But one thing that's interesting is that this crowd, of course, starting with Bush and Cheney, really were not elected as such. They never really are because of the Electoral College, but in this particular case, because of all the controversy, we can see that the American people really do not directly vote for their president. And in fact, during the litigation, Ted Olson was making the argument that the American people have no inherent constitutional right to vote for president, and he's right. But I would almost rather have us do away with the popular vote and just have the state legislatures appoint electors, which is what they could do, and they might
as well. That's the way I believe the Senate was originally designed to do. The states would pick their two richest people and send them off to Washington, and that was the original way the Senate was chosen. It wasn't
choose themselves.
I think it was in 1903, when senators actually first were up for election.
Sometime after the First World War,
election.
I think.
After the First World War.
I think so. No. Sometime in that.
It was long after the founding of the country, and it took democratic struggle, I mean real direct democracy struggle, in order to get even that of voting for senators.
But, you know, not to rehash the 2000 election, but it is kind of pertinent because that's how Bush got in.
Right.
They had suspected the conventional wisdom that it was going to be the other way around, that Gore was going to win the Electoral College.
He did win the popular.
No, but the conventional wisdom was going to be the other way around.
Well, he did win that, too.
Well, right, but, I mean, it was thought that Gore would win the electoral vote.
And he did.
And lose the popular.
See. But he won both.
If there were a count,
probably did.
If there were a count, he would have won the electoral vote too. But the Supreme Court said, "Oh, this is freaking out the shoppers at Christmas time, and we got to get this thing settled."
Well, they weren't exactly saying that,
they were.
But the point is, campaign all set by Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the right-wing talk radio to say, "Well, Mr. Gore is not the choice of the American people." But then, since it was the other way around, well, we have an electoral college, you know, and end of story, you know. And theoretically, of course, you could have the popular vote winner lose the election every time, theoretically.
Yeah,
and
why not? They, as long as the person who the power structure deems appropriate is in power,
but all these
it doesn't matter Republican or Democrat.
But all these right-wingers that are so stuck to the Constitution, you know they'd be whining like bloody hell if it had been the other way around. And so I don't go along with this idea, well, there's an electoral college and you've got to abide by the rules. There probably would have been riots in the street. And the other thing is, why are people so convinced that George Bush can protect us? This attack on 9/11, after all, did occur on his watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently, I've just read Gore Vidal's book, Dreaming War. I wish we had a copy of that we could put up on the screen right now. He compares 9/11 to the Pearl Harbor, in the sense that he believes that Roosevelt provoked the attack and knew the attack was coming and permitted it because he wanted to get into a war. It seems like 9/11, we were warned by the Israelis, we were warned by the Russians, we were even warned by the French that this was going to happen. And instead of being on the alert, the Northeastern Air Command was told to stand down.
Hijacking four airplanes really shouldn't be that easy, especially for supposedly a ragtag.
Bush has done everything that he could to delay to compromise and to prevent this investigation, which is finally beginning, and it's bringing, the investigation is already going, you know, doing something really fishy here.
There's just one factoid or comparison to, if you don't believe
just
that,
like
there's
the
some propaganda machine keeping this under wraps. If you remember back, this is before 9-1-1, there was a private jet transport that was carrying some famous golfer.
Yep.
And
Payne Stewart.
And they had some problems. I think the pilot dropped dead and the airplane was on autopilot. Within 15 minutes, they had scrambled jets who had visual contact, who were able to determine the precise nature of the problem, escort the plane, even though they had no way to get on the plane ended up crashing. But the point is, there they were, bang, 15 minutes there. And yet, when the plane hit the Pentagon, that was an hour and 15 minutes after. And this is supposed to be the center of government?
What kind
of craziness is that? And the point is, it's not on the media. That should be, if it were a free media, this is the biggest question that has come up in our nation in the last 2 years.
Well,
to a certain extent.
There is that book, Dreaming War, by Gore Vidal, I was talking about, and he was on C-SPAN. He did a two-hour talk, or was it an hour and a half?
3 hours, actually.
Well, I didn't see it all then. But I did read the book, and his point in that talk was that if you really read the main media closely, eventually they will say everything. You just have to be able to read.
Right.
You have to be able to see through the blizzard of lies.
Sure.
To the core of the matter. And
it's kind of
afraid that's what will be necessary if we're going to have a real democracy. But I'm afraid that most people are just too lazy.
It's kind of
discouraged, maybe.
Very discouraged.
It shouldn't be that people have to go out
of
their way.
Well, they're being worked to death,
for one thing.
And they have no hope. It's hard to think that things are going to improve. No,
well, that sense of hopelessness is part of the propaganda model, though.
That's true.
Put into people's minds that they don't matter, that they're powerless, that you can't fight City Hall. That plays right into their hands. That's the way it will work.
And everyone gets blamed for it. They blame the immigrants. They blame welfare workers. They blame the government regulators, they blame liberal Democrats. Everybody's being blamed except for who's really at fault, and that's the wealthy capitalists who don't really want to hire anybody.
They
would use machines and robots if they could.
And those damn capitalists. At this point, we're going to open up the phone lines so you can get in on the conversation, vent some spleen, challenge us if you think we're kind of crazy. Our phone number here, 459-4881, and we're live today on the 4th of June. I'm not sure how many graphics that we went through there. I saw the Economics of Empire cover from Harper's Magazine go by. That was the second graphic. And that was I love that graphic because it showed the big emperor with his thumb pressing down on the face of the masses. And that to me is a good metaphor for mind control, you know, squish your brain, put all that crap in your game show junk and sports junk and just eat it on up and ignore what's behind the curtain. And they'd love it when you do that. Just keep on doing it and you make them happy, happy, happy.
That's an excellent article. It's actually quite well documented. It's almost, I don't know, it's 20 pages long, maybe 50,000 words. Mainly concerned with how economics in the third world is working out, how the monetary fund is really doing in terms of helping out countries like Bolivia, and it's not a pretty sight.
That's another thing.
We need
thing
to look at how
I'm...
brutal our economic empire really is.
That's right. People, when they think of capitalism, they think that our country is the peak of capitalism. But from the capitalist point of view, the most capitalist countries are like Nigeria and Indonesia and the Congo, the places where they have total free reign to do exactly what they want.
Exactly.
Those are the real capitalist countries, and all this mucky muck stuff about, it equals freedom.
There's always political corruption. And
nutsoid. We have a phone call, and the phone caller is Steve. Thanks for calling in tonight, Steve. Your question or comment on really any topic whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to just make a comment on the tax cut.
Yeah.
And I just would like to throw out maybe a couple of questions to you guys and then just sit back and listen and maybe, if possible, comment on your response.
Certainly.
I I just have an impossible time believing that the solution to our problems is giving the government more of our money. I just have a fundamental, absolute problem with that proposition.
Do you have a problem with deficit spending?
Yes, I do.
Well, but you can't have both.
This conversation can go a bazillion different ways. And
okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I would just like to make that comment and get your response to that. And the second question I have for you, what do you think a fair tax rate is? I mean, the average American family, I think, has a median income of about $45,000 a year, has an absolute tax rate of about 40%. Not marginal rate. It's true.
I know that it's true. I don't think that people should be taxed at all. I think only corporations should be taxed. I don't think wages should be taxed, only unearned income. And I think that that is probably the original intent of the 16th Amendment, but it's been very twisted by the national security state. So, for the use in dominating the world through a huge military budget.
Okay, let's shelf the second question because we're getting into the tax code and structure, and that's a mind-numbingly complicated proposition.
No,
let's stick with the first part. I mean, do you really think giving the government more money is?
No, I think the government should get a lot less money. But the only way to do that is to get rid of the military. The imperialist military is where 90% of all that money ends up in the long run. They have lots of shell games for hiding it.
No, wait. Stop right there. No. It's about 30% of the money goes to the military.
Well, that's the way they spin it. But in the end, when you look at all the social services and all the other costs that come with being a militarized state,
the black budget,
basically we could run on about 10% of the money that the government gets if we were not a imperialist police state.
I disagree with that, but I don't think the numbers support that. But if you believe that,
well, I suggest you read Gore Vidal's *The Decline and Fall of the*.
Gore Vidal is a fictional novelist.
Well, actually, he's not a bad historian in his own right.
But I don't depend upon them for my sources of news.
Who do you depend on? Fox News?
No, I'm a history. I have a PhD in history.
But I wanted to respond to this business about giving the government taxes. It seems to me that a lot of people have no problem with the government getting their money when it comes to police, fire, military, investigating a president's sex life. That's okay. But when it comes to giving money to government to help people that are in need, there's a problem. And the other thing is, we keep hearing this business about, the people give 40% of their income to the government, or they work until May 16th or some nonsense.
Well, it's true.
It's true, but it's also true, sir, that your whole, the rest of your, if there were no government, all of your money would go to the private sector. I don't know why people like you have no problem with giving your grocer money, or the person that you buy your clothes from, or the gas station, or anything else. That somehow is wrong, or okay, but it's illegitimate to give money to the government. If there weren't a government, there'd be anarchy.
If it makes you feel better to rebut things I never said, go for it. But you never heard me say, I don't believe in government. So I'll let you go on from there if that makes you feel good, but I never said that.
He didn't say that.
That's not the implication was your life is not going to be better if you give money to the government.
Absolutely will not be better.
Well, then why have any taxes?
Because you need certain fundamental services the ones you mentioned, fire, police, and the military.
Just things you agree with.
You may need a military, but you don't have to have your military based all over the world, especially in countries where they don't like us. I mean, my mother always told me if someone doesn't like you, just leave them alone. But
good advice.
Yeah. I think your don't take it personally. I think your idea of what the government was set up for is brainwashed. I think you've come out of the educational system with a completely deficient idea of what democracy really was intended to do, which is to fight the power. People's power against the any other illegitimate power, and if they decide to use government to do it today, that's fine.
That's a legitimized thing.
It's not not everyone.
But the vast majority of the people brainwashed except for you.
The idea that this government-sanctioned monetary system, which actually is pretty privatized when you think about it. I mean, money is created by private banks, the Federal Reserve.
I think it's interesting
that I never
accused you personally of anything, but you seem to feel a need to say that I'm brainwashed. No, I'm trying to have a useful discussion with you, and you're accusing me of being mentally dysfunctional.
No, he's talking about he's talking about the entire American population, not you specifically.
Yeah, I said don't. No. I said don't take it personally.
He told me I was brainwashed by our educational system.
I said don't take it personally.
But so you can words have meaning, my friend. And if you want to say things and then later, 5 minutes later, say you didn't say.
Oh, I guess Steve is off the line.
Well,
but
I
will explain just to clarify, so he doesn't continue to take it serious. Not, I hope he takes it seriously, but not personally. Just because you are brainwashed doesn't mean that you're dysfunctional.
No.
I mean, anybody who's been brainwashed is a victim.
A victim,
and if
exactly.
you're a victim who spouts a philosophy which encourages cruelty to other people, which is what the free enterprise, no taxation, you know. I mean, what? Think about why private property is so important to protect. I mean, you mentioned that in there. Fire, okay. National defense, okay, we can go with that. But then the police to protect property. Oh, where did that come from? You know, am I concerned that someone's going to steal my shoes? Is that why that's there? No, it's not. It's to protect the factories from being taken over by the workers and things like that.
Well, part of
it.
Don't the police protect property more than people? That's how it is.
Sorry you got cut off there, Steve. Unintentional. And we do have another caller on the line. His name is Charlie. Thanks for calling tonight. And do you have a question or comment, Charlie?
Yes, I heard some of the start of your program, and I understand a lot of what you're saying. I just was curious. It seems to me that a lot of what you're saying, that you said you had to get to alternative sources, I've heard some of that in the mainstream media. So you seem to have the mainstream media as sort of a co-conspirator in the propaganda, and I just didn't see it as strong. I think the media has been very critical of the Bush administration and a lot of the things that have been going on. Yeah, that's what I sense.
Well, my impression, sorry, I'll just say a brief thing, is that I saw a heck of a lot of little flags down in the corner during all the build-up to the war and a lot of triumphalism and a lot of burning Dixie chick stuff organized by the media. These are giant corporations. Clear Channel owns 1,300 radio stations. That's just one of them, and there's like six major ones. I mean, these are major corporations with big interests. They will act in their own interests. That's they're there for. And why not brainwash people to turn the other way if they can get away with it? So it's not like a conspiracy in the sense of, you know, they plan the airplanes going into the towers, but they're totally willing to use it to their advantage. Anybody would be. Next.
Well, I just think that the news media has been very kind toward George Bush and the Bush administration. It might be because he supposedly is so popular, they don't want to challenge a popular president. It might be because they're in on the whole thing, they're just flacking for Bush. It might be because even news commentators are afraid of what happened in 9/11, and they feel that this man can protect us. Who knows? But I don't see much criticism. There's a little criticism, naturally, but by and large, almost everything he does is commented on in an approving way, and nobody seems to bring up the fact that the man actually did not win the election.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's kind of, I think that a lot of people have brought that up, but I guess it's just kind of old news now.
Well, so is the Holocaust, but I mean, you can't forget these things, you know?
What we're experiencing here is the end of a republic and the beginning of an empire. This is analogous to Augustus Caesar, you know, seizing government to establish order and preserve the empire, obviously, but still it's drifting from the original democratic intent that most people fought the war for independence for. We're losing our objectivity, and the media is certainly contributing to it. I mean, they maintain the illusion of objectivity by throwing in some criticism or even doing some real reporting, but for the most part, it's all buried under a barrage of corporate triumphalism, where the only model for humanity is this global economy whereby major corporations extract all the wealth from the earth and from as many people as they can and leave both the earth and the people and their cultures devastated. And this is a travesty. This is, it's not right, because we have everything we need to be a democratic society, to be a society capable of letting everyone have their dignity and their job, you know, and of not destroying the world. But instead, we're giving away all our power to these major corporations who are also the media, and they're telling us there's no alternative. And I think that's what John means when he says that people are being brainwashed to the point where they feel that there's no alternative, but there is an alternative. And history has taught us that people can, in solidarity, act in their own interests and improve their situation. Maybe not completely, but bit by bit. But when we forget to fight the ruling class that wants to oppress us, when we forget to watch our so-called elected leaders,
watch our
and
backs.
make sure that they don't rip us off and sell the earth out from under unborn generations forever, then we lose it. When the people fall asleep and stop watching their rulers, the rulers will take advantage of them to the point where the society will be destroyed by their own rapaciousness. And history's shown it over and over again.
Yeah, well, I guess I would agree. Well, I welcome the dialogue. Yeah, and I appreciate your show and your willingness to put the dialogue out there.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you for the call. And we're going on to our next caller, who is Bob. Bob's online.
Yeah, hi.
Give us a challenge.
Hey, I would just like to challenge the notion that the information isn't out there. I think a person who wants to be informed can be. And just to say this, that the media does this, or the media brainwashes, or the school system does this or that, you know what? Education has always been the responsibility of the individual. And I'm telling you, there's C-SPAN out there, there's Fox News, there's CNN, there's the networks, there's go down to the library, there's hundreds of magazines offering.
Excuse me, all those networks you just mentioned are giant corporations.
Well, you know, get off it. Get off that kick. So what, they're giant corporations?
Well, that doesn't make any difference to you at all.
No, it doesn't.
It's a conflict of interest.
I wonder why it is that that makes no difference to you. Doesn't that raise a question in your mind? Why don't you care
let me ask
about
you this.
These being giant
corporations? Do you think there's a difference in bias between Fox News and CNN?
Heavens, yes.
Not much.
Well, they're both owned by corporations.
Not much. Not much.
Oh, come
really.
On.
Well, one is a centrist.
Come on.
One is a centrist, and one's owned by an Australian fascist.
I agree.
They're both corporate, you know, just lambasting corporations is a straw dog. We need to get creative thinking here. People are just mouthing the same old platitudes.
I disagree with John. I think CNN is a relatively centrist network. Fox is way to the right. MSNBC is trying to go to the right. They're almost all trying to go to the right, at least in the cable area. Now, the networks, I think, have always been moderate. But you must remember, as far as Hitler was concerned, Mussolini was a moderate. You know, if you're so far to the right that you're a Nazi, you're going to think a fascist is too liberal. So the reason that conservatives thought there was a liberal media is because it was never far right enough. I mean, there'll come a time when Rupert Murdoch will be too liberal.
But don't you agree that there's a pretty broad menu of opinion out there?
Not really.
No. Let me ask you a question.
Come on, guys.
Let me ask you a question.
What about C-SPAN?
Can I ask you a question?
C-SPAN is the best. You're right. C-SPAN is the best.
What about you guys, for God's sakes? You guys are on frickin' TV.
Well, nobody pays attention to us, though.
Oh, but you're on TV.
Yeah.
Whose fault is that?
Well, we're hardly the corporate media, but
I agree with Bob.
There are still outlets. But
you're sitting there on a television show claiming that there's no diversity in the media. I mean, you're hoisting yourselves on your own petard.
Well, it's kind of like Bill O'Reilly talking about the elite media when he makes $20 million a year working for Rupert Murdoch.
That's so a little, what? That's are you a, jealous?
Isn't that ridiculous?
No, it's not ridiculous.
It's not?
I wish I was making $20 million.
So do I, but
Bill O'Reilly pays more taxes than all of us put together.
I hope so, but that's not my point. My point is he talks about
fact.
The elite media. He is the elite media.
Yeah.
I won't argue with that statement.
All right, fine.
But
Can I ask Bob? Can
sure.
I ask you a question?
Please.
Just to show the bias in the media, whether on CNN or pick your network, comparing the amount of coverage of the stock market, which is a concern of the rich, basically. I mean, maybe
I'm not rich, and that's a concern of mine.
Oh, you own a lot of stock?
I define a lot. I mean, yeah, I own stock. Yes, I have a vested interest in the stock market.
Do you live off the earnings from your stock?
I do not.
All right.
I aspire to someday.
I will define people who own a lot of stock as people who live off the earnings just of their stock and do not work. And that's really what the stock market pretty much is made for anyways.
Well,
and look at all the coverage that's given to that. Every little blip and gyration, and is it up or down, and what sector, and blah, 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 blah. It goes on and on. And how many?
Shut it off.
And
turn it off if you don't like it.
No. My comparison is how much labor news is on these same networks.
Would anybody watch it?
There are an order of magnitude more people who are laborers than stock
That's
owners.
That's not what I asked you. I asked you, would anybody watch? I mean, do you guys do? Do you have any idea what your ratings are?
I watch
you guys religiously. I love you guys. I do.
Oh, excellent.
And I don't. I'm not saying that facetiously. I do. I think you guys are. I wish there were more shows like you guys on. But how many people watch besides me and maybe a couple dozen other? I mean,
you
can't, it's like there's a saying amongst DJs about it's in the grooves, and they talk about, well, let's manufacture a hit song. You can't do it. It doesn't work. Either the song, it's in the grooves or it isn't. And this idea that, you know, the mass media is brainwashing people, I don't think it leads to constructive discussion.
Well, Bob, can I ask you a question?
Sure,
Do you think that commercial television and radio tend towards the lowest common denominator?
Absolutely. I agree. But I do believe cable has helped that somewhat by creating more market niches like the cooking show, for God's sake. There's a freaking network for cooks. I mean,
Golf Network.
The Golf Network, for God's sake. I mean, I think there should be a labor network. I guess the question I would pose to you, why isn't there?
Well, because it's not in the people's interest who own the resources of the country to allow that to happen.
But you guys are on TV.
Well, it's because this city
and
made
Time
a contract.
Warner would like to see us go away.
Yeah,
when
sure.
they put the cable stations in.
This is a contractual thing. We have to be allowed to have this studio here
as a
franchise for the cable company to make its profits.
Well, we don't want to get too on this, you know, in the same vein as the conservatives for years who acted like they were picked on. We have been given the opportunity, as Bob says, to be on here and to express our views. If people don't watch us, maybe that's our fault. He does have a point in that. So the only point we're trying to make, Bob, is that the large networks, cable and network, in some ways might gravitate towards the center, even to the left, on social issues. But on economics, they all pretty much gravitate toward the right, and that's only logical because they're owned by billionaires. They're not going to, you know, you're going to, very soon I'm going to see Ted Turner, Rupert Murdoch, or anybody else put out an agenda there that would result in their money being taken from them and distributed to the workers at large. That just isn't going to happen. They might move to the left on issues like abortion, for instance. There's an awful lot of people that are pro-choice, but they still don't want to pay any taxes. I'm talking about very wealthy people. And so that's the problem. As John said, there's almost no coverage given to labor unions. Instead, we're wondering about whether Scott Peterson murdered his wife or not. If he did, it's a terrible thing, but I'm wondering why this case, you must admit, why is that case being given so much coverage? Why was the Chandra Levy case covered
because
so
much? Because people watch it.
We've entitled our
because
show...
Because people watch it. I mean, and I agree with you, it's heinous, but...
Bob, to dispel a delusion I think that you may have, networks don't base their programming and they don't gain their profits directly from the viewership.
No.
They absolutely do.
Their business model...
They absolutely do.
No, their business model is to sell viewership to advertisers.
Right.
But their primary customer aren't going to pay to advertise on a program that has no viewers.
Their primary customer is the advertiser.
Of course
And
it
their,
is.
The advertiser's concern is always, first and foremost, always...
Right.
Always.
And so
the viewership...
You've created a little circular argument here. Come on. Look, it's based on... Anybody who's ever been involved in television or radio of any sort knows it's all driven by ratings.
No.
It's all driven by how many people you can get to watch.
That's not true. Phil Donahue was taken off even though he had fairly good ratings. And I think Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly would be on no matter what their ratings were, because they have an agenda they have to put.
With all due respect, I think you guys are a little off base here. I mean, you can't tell them that they're all profit driven and they're these big money grabbing corporations, and then say that they're not driven by profit.
They're more
profit. Which is what you're saying.
They're more profit driven than ideologically driven.
They are
probably.
They are.
But their interests are. With the ruling class.
Well,
and
could it be that more people have to share that interest?
No.
No?
Well, people who work for a living rather than living off of investments have a radically different interest. This is what I brought up at the beginning of the program, was how this tax cut leaves out the child credit increase for people who make less than $26,000 a year.
People that make less than $26,000 a year don't pay income taxes.
I don't think that's entirely true.
Accountant.
I don't think
Please.
That's entirely.
They also pay sales taxes and everything else, but
fees and
automobiles.
I said income taxes. I didn't say FICA. I didn't say sales tax. People that make less than $26,000 a year don't pay income taxes. I do 200 individual tax returns a year. Trust me on this.
Oh, okay.
Now, we can argue about other things, but I mean. Please. I mean, if you're going to.
I wonder why the Grand Rapids Press had headlines on the front page saying that this was so. Then,
saying
perhaps
what,
they're
saying
mistaken.
What was so?
They were saying that there would not be an increase in the tax credit for people.
There won't.
Well, was it another number? Was it $36,000
or
what?
What you said was specifically true. Yes, you're right. That small point was true. But it's also true that people that make $26,000 a year or less don't pay income tax.
Well, you know, as the Bible says, to whom much is given, much is expected.
Exactly.
And I think people who make a lot of money ought to stop whining so much, like O'Reilly does, about how much money he pays in taxes. He's probably undertaxed.
Then just don't take any more. How's that? Let's all agree that the rich pay enough and leave them alone.
No, they don't. They don't pay enough.
How much is enough?
Well, you know, we would all have a lot less taxes if we could get rid of an imperial military. We've totally lost our soul to this Pentagon thing, and it's going to drag us to our destruction.
But that's not even being paid
and
for.
And they said that it's going to cost a lot of money on the way.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here, and I don't think we're going to get resolved
well, Bob,
any of this in one.
Appreciate your interest.
I never really got to make my point or ask my question of Bob, which is about how this vulgarization of TV, how media has to be popular to get the advertising to tends towards the lowest common denominator.
Right.
And this brutalizes and vulgarizes young minds.
Yeah.
And the most insidious thing about the mass media as I see it is how shallow the debate is.
I agree.
And how they use montages of images to confuse you and to blunt your attention span.
Right.
And this is how a lot of people, especially children, get brainwashed. You see it all the time. Commercials are designed to appeal to our worst natures. If you watch a television commercial very closely, you will notice that it always appeals to one of the seven deadly sins.
I agree.
Usually lust, but often greed, vanity, sloth, gluttony.
Off-road. Isn't that one of the seven deadly sins? Off-road?
Off-road driving? Just pure, destructiveness, malice,
Right. No.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, how, like your program, for example, how many unobstructed 30-minute blocks of sheer intellectual discussion are there?
An hour. We have an hour.
An hour. Are you guys on for an hour? I thought you were half hour.
Well,
firing line used to be.
It's rare.
Well, even firing line.
We're better than firing
another,
line.
Another thing of the, I mean, not to blow off your conversation, Bob, but I'm just going back to the propaganda model. Another part of it is not just the holding one viewpoint and pushing it as in like the Pravda model of propaganda.
Right.
But it's rather to constrain, you know, say, oh, there's a liberal, that's as radical as we dare to get. And so the debate becomes constrained between this tepid liberal and this far-right fanatic. And in the middle is called the centrist.
Well, the other,
Al Gore and George Bush.
By default.
But the other thing is that the three of us sitting here, if you were to see us after the show is over, we don't necessarily all agree on everything.
No, we disagree on everything.
In fact, to your question about how much should taxes be, I, advocate overthrowing the entire capitalist system and abolishing private property completely. That's my viewpoint.
Well, you may advocate that, but you got to know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, see, I don't, not tomorrow,
but it will eventually.
Well, yeah. It never has in the past.
People break free of the propaganda, they've been, you know, what's this private property thing? It's something that you heard from your grandparents.
There won't be any capitalism when Jesus returns.
Right now, I would just be satisfied with maybe getting back a little closer to the Bill of Rights and not letting hysteria.
There's a novel thought.
Make us throw out what's good about our country while we become this global empire that doesn't even want to look at what we're doing.
See, the Patriots.
We want nice, pretty images on TV. We don't want to see what's really happening to people when they work in a sweatshop in Haiti for, what is it now?
Another
like
thing
75
is,
cents an hour?
Another thing, Steve, is that the U.S. Patriot Act has scared even people like Dick Armey and Bob Barr.
You know, the Romans were at least honest about they could see a bunch of people killed and just cheer, you know. They were honest about the brutality of their
empire.
Well,
we still do that. There's people sitting in bars watching The Last War, you know, having a drink and eating a pizza, chasing a blonde, maybe.
Right, but it's circuses. They're giving us circuses, but no bread.
Yeah, cut back on the human services, hospitals, everything cut back on.
So it's like they're saying, well, we've got such a powerful police state now, we don't even have to give you bread. We'll just beat you silly if you get out of line.
We have another call, and it's...
Yeah,
hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay,
What's your name, caller?
What?
What's your name, caller?
Ed.
Ed? Hello, Ed. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, just a couple of comments based on some of the previous callers, as well as other things said earlier. Or questions, if you wish. But first, that the emphasis on the income tax, the caller, perhaps you... just called, wanted to focus on that. Number one, the taxes that hit the lower income groups, sales and FICA, are biased against the poor, which is a point that let's say the have-lesses, however you want to call them.
Oh my gosh, and it's double taxation too, right, Ed? It's double, that dreaded double taxation.
In what sense?
The FICA and sales taxes.
Oh, well, yeah, the FICA tax. Well, that phases out. If you have all your income from investment, you pay no 7.5%. Let's say it's 7.5% approximately.
Right. I didn't want to get all technical, but
nobody pays FICA on investment income, which means that the wealthy don't pay that. Number two, if you are a corporate executive and your income is primarily, or a large part of it is salary, you only pay on the first $80-some thousand, your FICA.
Right.
As far as sales tax goes, the kinds of activities that people buy and sell stock, you don't pay sales tax on it. You buy or sell a used car, the poor person does, they pay sales tax on that transition. Now, of course, we've gone much further by cutting out dividends, the major source of the upper class. We're just going to make tax-free.
Right.
Even some upper-class members, I mean, at least their consciences are pricked.
Sure.
Warren Buffett said, my rates with this new tax rate, cutting out dividends, my tax rate's going to be lower than my receptionist. She will pay a higher income tax rate than I will.
But you know,
Warren Buffett, who's, in a sense, I'm saying he's the epitome of the investment capitalist, but he's the exception.
Bill Gates also objects
Bill
to the
Gates
tax
and
cut
his father.
On the same ground.
Right.
Bill Gates' father, Bill Gates Sr.
Can I
make a point here before you go on?
Could I? All right, I'll stop because there's one more comment.
I just want to make a point.
Sure, it's not a dialogue.
You said that they had their conscience pricked. I'm unable to read their minds, but I would propose a different motive, which is goes back to the propaganda, is that propaganda is both in the sense of advertising is meant to generate markets and profits directly, and capitalists live off that. That's what they want. But the equally important, and I'd never underestimate it, in fact, I think capitalists are willing to take a monetary loss in order to maintain the system, the status quo as it is.
Sure.
It's an equal importance. They are willing to take a loss. They are willing to have fiscal train wrecks. They are willing to have recessions that put millions of people out of work, as long as it allows them to maintain control of the levers of power. And if, I'm not sure you said Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or George Soros, you say they have twinges of conscience. It may be just that they're working out in their heads their own self-interest and realizing, well, if we go too far,
well, they
with
are
this,
because they don't
the
want
whole,
society to collapse.
The whole edifice is going to collapse. People will catch wise to how bad we're ripping them off.
If you're
and that's
right,
that's hardly conscience.
Well, so. But see, the people I mentioned are a minority. The rest, and we have to, I think, understand this. What makes ideology, the upper class ideology, so powerful is that they believe it. In other words, most of them honestly believe, and it's so easy to be seduced by what economically benefits you, you translate into benefiting the entire upper class.
I don't think
they're presenting. No, you were suggesting these people are cynical. The ruling class isn't cynical. It actually believes it's propaganda, but basically, if we analyze it, their interests are served.
Well, I do think that they believe they deserve what they've got, but beyond that, it's awfully hard to read their minds.
No, I don't think they really do believe it. The real problem is, like some of our callers, most of whom are friendly tonight, but I would imagine most of them are from what we would call the ruling or working class. These folks really believe it, and that's the unfortunate part. The people disseminating the propaganda, for the most part, do not. And what you have with Gates and Buffett there is people being honest for a change. They all know it's BS, that they don't need a tax cut. It doesn't stimulate the economy. It doesn't do any of that stuff. But unfortunately, the working class, the folks making $26,000 or less, they're saying, well, yeah, I don't pay any taxes anyway, and that guy will get a tax cut, and he may provide some jobs for me, and then I can work, you know, and my family. They really believe this, and that's the sad part. It's not what the ruling class thinks. They know this is all garbage. Unfortunately, the working class has been brainwashed, to use John's word, and, you know, it's an interesting thing about brainwash, just to kind of allude to this situation of George Romney, who ran for president way back in 68, said he was brainwashed about the Vietnam War, and immediately was no longer a contender. He was just honest enough to say he'd been brainwashed. As you said, most people that are brainwashed, they're not bad people, they're victims. And these folks in the working class that are just barely making it, maybe one paycheck away from destitution, who really believe that a tax cut for the upper class is going to somehow benefit them, I mean, they are poor, deluded fools. They really are.
They are. I'm just simply saying that that kind of thinking is not to their benefit. They are deluded, but again, I'm just simply saying that those at the top also are deluded by the system. One last other point that the argument about war that Steve was making and the costs, etc. Yet the costs are paid by all of us, but those who benefit from empire are that small, again, investor class who really benefits from this global economy and protection of markets and the global market.
They're also the ones who benefit from this tax cut.
Yes.
Which is why we tried to couple the two issues.
Good.
I missed your first few minutes,
so maybe you may have said that. And it's only it only begins to make sense. The costs of war, etc., make sense, and the cost of our military policies makes sense if we begin to analyze it in terms of the economic interests of the wealthy being protected, as well, of course, more directly the defense contractors. But otherwise, it doesn't make sense. The amount we expend of our national treasure on military adventures doesn't benefit the nation corresponding to the cost, but those who have less pay for the cost, and the benefits are restricted to those who have more, that minority, and if power isn't concentrated in their hands, then it makes perfect sense.
War is a subsidy to the oil companies in more levels than one. If you had to pay for the gallon of gas for how much it keeps the military just to keep open the Straits of Hormuz to get the oil out of the Middle East. Just there, you know, you would double the price at least of what your gas is costing. So this is all subsidy to the oil industry so that they can maintain a society in which you are virtually forced to own a car to participate in anything like civilization.
Yeah, the people, you know, the interests, the owning class, the ruling class, will gladly spend $2 of your money to protect $1 of their money.
Right. I'll let another... thanks for the agreement. Somebody else, I'll let another caller get on. I've spent more than my share of time. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Ed.
Good show, guys. Bye.
Well, we don't have another caller lined up, so maybe we can flip back onto the graphics. I'm not sure how far we got.
Well, I wish you would show the captions with the graphics, too. Gerard, if
so,
you could use...
Let's throw up a graphic there, and...
The captions are sort of the point. Yeah, talk about the pictures.
Oh, there's one.
How about that one?
I'm digging my own grave now, but soon it will be yours also. War, get used to it. That's it. Yeah. Put it in your brain as a vibe. We are at war, perpetually at war. You just get used to it after a while, and you hardly notice all the hours of your life that you work away for someone else, making someone else rich, and then all the hours that go on your taxes to...
And all they give you is
fight this war.
All they give you is Armageddon, eternal war against evil in Central Asia, a land war in Central Asia.
Depleted,
thank you very much.
Depleted uranium wastelands.
That's what you get for your tax money.
Now that's funny. You know, who are they going to get to pump out that oil in the lands that they've irradiated with depleted uranium? Well, they're certainly not going to go pump their own oil. They're going to get poor people who won't know about this depleted uranium, who will get sick to pump this oil.
And they'll tell them, hey, it beats starving to death, right?
Yeah.
And then when the oil's gone, they'll let them all starve to death.
And,
well, the work's done. You can starve to death now.
So keep on going. Keep on going with the graphics here. The governors of Baghdad. I didn't really have a comment on that, Steve. You chose that one. What did you want to say about that?
Well, things have changed since that article was written, and the governor he was talking about got fired, and I'm sure we'll go through a series of messed up attempts. But the biggest point I'd like to make about that is the plans they had were obviously to protect the oil wells as soon as they got in, but they let everything else go. They let the museum go, the library go. They even let uranium be looted, like they want these terrorists not only to have the reason, but the means to scare us. It's like that Hermann Göring quote you were talking about from Nuremberg, how most people don't want war, but if you could scare them enough and make them walk in lockstep and silence any dissent, people will do it.
Right. The problem is that most people don't realize the government that is most threatening to them is their own. I mean, certainly the Iranians, who call us the great Satan, the United States, their biggest enemy is the mullahs running the country. And we talk about the terrorists in the Middle East and all that and all these nutcases over there, and they are a threat to us to some extent, but not a big a threat as our own government and the economic superstructure that's behind it.
And the fact that we train the most crazy element of those people.
Because they were anti-communist.
Yeah, they're anti-communist,
they're
anti-whatever the thing is. I mean, they're anti-terrorists today and terrorists tomorrow.
We fought against godless communism, now we're fighting against people that are very godly, but they're terrorists.
Here's a good proof that the media is propagandizing the public by repeating what the administration says. More than half of the American people believe that Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein actually have something to do with each other.
Yeah,
you know,
completely fabricated.
They think that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11, but he doesn't. On the other hand, very few of those people realized that Osama bin Laden was a CIA asset in the war in Afghanistan against the Russians in the 80s, and he was trained in terrorism and supported and given weapons and started developing his jihad network at that time under our tutelage.
Well, when that does come out, people like O'Reilly will say, oh, but that's history. That's ancient history.
Right, that's what they always like to say. But you notice that now that the U.S. is in control of Afghanistan again, the heroin traffic has picked up to its previous rates.
Well,
every time the CIA goes in and does anything anywhere, it was cocaine in the 80s from Central America. It was heroin from Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. They're flooding our cities with narcotics to give the excuse for the war on drugs. It's like, you got to scare these people. All right, so let's get some junkies going here. The CIA has been the largest importer of narcotics, you know, for how many years now? 40, 50 years. We're still being told to be afraid of the, and give up more liberties, let them break into your house and kill you and your whole family.
And that great hero, Ollie North, was up to his eyeballs in this drug trade.
Absolutely.
Riff off your mentioning of history, would you say Bill O'Reilly said, oh, that's history, as if history didn't work in
right.
the past. I mean, history did work. And that headline that we put up there, the governors of Baghdad, what came to my mind was, isn't that what they called, the British called the people that they installed in India, the governors?
Yeah. Well, in fact, the
British. No, it's the same thing. It's the same old empire thing, except now, you know, when we look at India and Great Britain, we see it as history and something that's not happening.
Yeah.
But now the media presents it, the governors of Baghdad and this whole thing, as if it's just a natural outflow of perfect human nature just working itself out.
You know, I think
no need to analyze what a governor means.
Well, I believe the world opinion, including the French and Russians and everybody else, has been extremely kind toward the United States. Let's look at what they did here. They did not officially declare war, as the Constitution says they should. They did not rescind the order against assassinating foreign leaders, which they tried to do with Hussein. They ignored world opinion, the United Nations, and international law by invading a country with no provocation, which was an indictment against the Nazis of Nuremberg.
Right.
One of the things that they were indicted
preemptive
for
war.
Was conducting preemptive, non-provoked wars. So on all levels, this was a criminal act. It doesn't matter that Hussein is a criminal, because he is, of course. But this was a battle between two gangsters, essentially, and the one with the most firepower won.
And both of them like to mouth off about God and how God was going to justify their acts of carnage.
I think Hussein is pretty secular.
We're almost
maybe
out of
more
time.
Than Bush, but he still mouthed words about God, which is what a lot of them do.
We're almost out of time. I'd like to just make a point that off of something that Rick said about the biggest gangster and who would win. As I remember, the last time the United States fought a war against anything like a balanced enemy, it was in Vietnam. We got our butts kicked in Vietnam.
Well, actually,
ever since then, every war, it hasn't even been a war, it's been like a force that we send in against completely almost defenseless things.
Right.
Iraq, Afghanistan,
Panama.
We've had Somalia and Lebanon with our tails
but
between
it's enough
our legs.
To get the people waving their flags and get the propaganda thing going. So free yourself, people. Free yourself.
The government can't free you.